435, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. It is Friday Eve. It is holding steady, 80, 82 degrees. And yes, we do, in fact, have a possibility of thunderstorms rolling through sometime this evening. Because we always have a possibility of thunderstorms rolling through sometime this evening during the summer. Central Virginia. We've got Rob Chadwick, who's going to be joining us at 5:35, United States Concealed Carry Association, retired FBI supervisory special agent, headed up their tactical operations, teaching people tactics and shooting and all the rest of that stuff at Quantico. Looking forward to chatting with him. Oh, and Riley Shiley. Riley Shiley is going to pop in for a couple of moments. The Virginia Council has a big, big event coming up, a fun event. And you're invited to it, but the time to register is running out. So I think she's holding it open for just another day or two for my listeners, and we'll get the details in a couple of moments. As you know, I happen to think the world of Tony Pham. I have admired his dedication to the country. I have stood in awe of him as he has accepted every single solitary challenge to help and to lead. And Tony is now a senior fellow at the America First Policy Institute. And he's going to be joining us on a regular basis again. And we're just thrilled to get Tony into the lineup here to talk about a variety of issues. His specialty, clearly, is bailiwick, is the immigration matter. But again, he is now a senior fellow for the America First Policy Institute. Tony, thank you for being here. And big time congratulations. That's a pretty impressive post, my friend.
Oh, Jeff, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to join you and talk to your listeners. And again, thank you for the kind words about my new role with the America First Policy Institute. America First, America always.
Yeah. Wow. What a great line. God, that is beautiful. Yeah, say it again, because I want to hear it again. Everybody should hear that.
I know. America First, America always, coming from a refugee who came to this country in 1975, right? It's their mission set is in line with what my beliefs are and how great this nation is. And I'm always proud and grateful for the opportunity to appear in multiple different spaces to represent their mission, but also to talk about a lot of the policy-related issues that are going to be coming down the pike or have come down the pike from this administration, but also provide a unique and dynamic contrast to what it was like the previous 4 years. I don't always want to live in the past, but to appreciate and understand the pragmatic way forward to saving this nation that we all love, we do have to compare what life was like the previous 4 years.
Oh, we absolutely do. Oh, good Lord, we absolutely do. President Trump has accomplished so much in the first 6 months. I've never seen a president get that much done in the first 6 months in office. And his operations in once again securing the border, my gosh, he's done incredible work. You tell me, what are you seeing? What is the big difference between 2 years ago and now?
Oh, no, absolutely. And Jeff, you know, I always like to say this, and forgive me for taking the second to just comment. I've had the privilege of serving President Trump in two administrations now, but in three different capacities, right? One as the principal legal advisor, one as the acting director for immigration from the operations side standpoint, but then also as the assistant secretary for border security from the policy side. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I will note is this administration coming into 2025 moved with precise expertise and precision compared to the previous administration, Joe Biden, who came in and the only thing they ran on or worked on was undoing everything President Trump's first administration had effectively done. This administration, this time around, 47, however, blazed their own trail. They had some time to work through all the chess pieces. So you could see it in comparison to all of the executive orders that were issued in a cascading manner, right? They just came flowing out. And I say that affectionately because I was in charge of the policy shop that received all of the policies. So I didn't sleep for a while. But that was a privilege of losing a lot of sleep in an effort to be a part of a team of well-intentioned and qualified people with certain subject matter expertise who were putting in the policies that he wanted to see to shut down the border. I mean, we have historic lows right now in looking at the border crossings and border interdictions that CBP has to go through. Historic numbers, better than what we've seen before in his previous administration. But we're also seeing these executive orders that are looking at unique and critical ways to approach, new and novel ways to approach the Immigration Title Aid Enforcement Authority, right? Utilizing multiple different law enforcement agents and officers who do have historically had Title VIII authority to enforce immigration laws, but failed to do so for a multitude of reasons. I'm not going to delve into every individual department's, but you know, to be able to identify those equities and those authorities and put them all into a singular plan was quite impressive to be a part of, and I'm pretty excited to see. A lot of the results come from what are those results? Historic number of deportations, right? Lower numbers, historic low numbers at border interdictions and border crossings. Getting criminal aliens out of the United States, keeping true to his word that he's going to protect the American people through aggressive illegal immigration enforcement. So, on that front, that's the big difference, is they put the action plan in play and have not deviated from it.
Mm-hmm. What is there to say about the obstacles being placed in the way of the DHS and ICE and the removal folks who are out there? The mayor of Los Angeles, obviously, they're putting up all sorts of robots. And locally, look, Danny Avola, the mayor of Richmond, making clear that as far as he's concerned, Richmond is a sanctuary city. Does any of this stuff hold any weight at all?
I don't know what it means to hold weight. What I do know is if you're going to self-declare that you're a sanctuary, there will be consequences that come down the pike from the federal government for being a sanctuary city. And what that means is not cooperating with ICE or actually taking affirmative steps to be obstructionist to the enforcement of immigration law. Now, I don't want to pre-sell it. I do have an op-ed coming out having a discussion about what constitutes a locality or an entity as a sanctuary city. And that was born from some of that confusion that occurred when DHS had initially published that list, that famous list that so many people wanted to jump up and down about. But I wanted to be able to utilize my experience in all three capacities across two different administrations to be able to provide the reader who may not know what it really means to not cooperate with ICE. Having run a jail with ICE detainees, I do understand the requirements that were placed on being able to house illegal immigrants, as we call them, illegal aliens, but also being able to turn them over to ICE when necessary. So it's coming down the pike. Hopefully it'll be published soon, Jeff, and I'd love to come back on the show and have a more robust and dynamic discussion with regard to those standards to qualify as a sanctuary. But some of the obstacles we're seeing right now is simply put this way. When the Democrats lose the argument on policy, they are perfectly okay in accepting the violence that occurs that comes after it, right? Yeah. It's almost like having school-age children who don't get their way. And so now what do? They stamp their feet and they're okay when things start getting thrown. And I apologize for likening it to kids, but what we're watching right now is the environment beginning to devolve and reduce itself into sheer violence against our officers and our agents on the street. Yep. And that's unacceptable, right? Completely unacceptable. Anyone who supports law enforcement needs to be in a position to support our agents and officers who are merely doing their job. It's the same analysis, right, Jeff? Back in 2020 in September, when these radicals descended upon my home, and what they did was they protested my wife and kids, and really, for what? I just wanted to do a job, and that was enforce the law. So what we're seeing right now across the United States, across the space, people like Brandon Johnson, people like Mayor Michelle Wu up in Boston, people like Karen Bass out in L.A., being obstructionists, even the senator out there in California and his theatrics, and claiming that he was violated, being thrown to the ground, however he yet to identify himself. The left has begun to enable this level of violence. And I'm going to give you an example. just recently, H.R. 4176, No Secret Police Act of 2025, was introduced by Representative Dan Goldman and co-sponsored by 42 Democrats in Congress, right? Mm-hmm. What that calls for is demanding and requiring our law enforcement to wear their official insignia, but also removing their face masks. Right now, granted, Antifa, the radical wing of the Democrat Party, Antifa, they're perfectly happy in wearing all of those face masks, face coverings. And in fact, in 2020, during COVID, all the liberals and Democrats would ever scream about and shame you for is not wearing a mask, right? But let me say this. Instead of focusing on condemning the violence, standing up and supporting our law enforcement by supporting effective and aggressive prosecution, we're looking at, I'm going to give you another example, the 10 individual members in Texas who were planning an ambush at the Prairie Land Detention Center out there in Alvarado, Texas, right? The subsequent ambush attack shooting of the CBP substation in McAllen, Texas. And I was there, right, Jeff? I showed you pictures in 2020, visited McAllen. This is the byproduct of enabling a radical wing of their party who can't, when they don't win the argument on policy, they think they convince the American people by using violence. And I will simply say this, they are writing the best midterm political ads that I can see right now. Quite honestly, right? Because I would challenge any mom and pop in suburban America who turns on the TV and sees the individuals out in L.A. being allowed to stand on U.S. soil, burn our American flag, but wave a foreign nation's flag of the country that they left and didn't want to live in, right? Great political ad, if you ask me, but I'm just being facetious at this point and pretty punchy. So forgive me because for someone
that is spot on. And you know what, Tony? Let's end it right there. Okay. You're going to come back. I want people to read the op-ed piece. Where's the best place for folks to find that? Where's it going to be?
I will certainly let you know. You can mention it on the show, but I think we're going to be targeted large-scale publications, large-scale newspapers. We'll be targeting it so it gets a broader review from based upon my prior experience. In that space.
Perfect. Well, Tony Pham, you are a good man. You've always been a good man. You're a great American, and I love you joining our regular rotation here. That is my friend Tony Pham. Tony is senior fellow now for the America First Policy Institute, and their tagline, I love this, America First, America Always. God bless America. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA.